Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to a classic big interview. This is where we dig into the vaults and choose an episode from earlier in our shows. This time, we've gone all the way back to season 2018-19 and opted for one of our, and your, absolute favourites. This is what I had to say about it back then. Do enjoy. Here's the news you've all been waiting for. Kevin Bridges is back on The Big Interview. The man that listeners voted their favourite ever guest returned during his sellout stint at Glasgow's SECC, during which Kevin recorded his new DVD, which is out right now. This is Kevin on football mostly. As you'll know from his first visit way back in season one of The Big Interview, it's not about his routines on stage. He's contagiously, infectiously, naturally funny, and he knows his football. So, thanks to Kevin, thanks to Hotel Duvan in Glasgow, where we hung out again for this chat, and thanks to all of you for listening to it. I need to establish some things. You're not just here because, you know, there's a certain degree of brotherly love between us. You're here because of statistical reasons. You're the first ever repeat big interview, and still the biggest audience numbers ever. And sorry, Jürgen, bigger than Klopp. Yes, Kevin, bigger than Klopp.
I'll take that.
Thank you. I thought you might be pleased about that. So, sir, given that this is the sequel, let me pick up. Traditionally, you're supposed to begin with something, you know, positive. But let me pick up on a down note. Like, the last interview was a lot about meeting Henrik the first time, the bus ticket, ink on his jeans.
Yep.
Now, I saw you on television at Soccer AM, where they finally got you on the programme.
That's right. I actually met him. You know what I mean? As an adult. I don't think I met him as an autograph hunter as a kid, but that was...
And I have
that
to
was
say,
the first time we'd actually...
For my taste, it didn't live up to, because you utterly outplayed him on the football pitch, and that's the thing I'm trying to build a platform to say. Like, he was rubbish, and you were quite good. And yep. You outscored him and outplayed him. Had you been out drinking the night before? What was the story?
I had actually been out drinking the night before. The night before that recording, I was having a few beers with my tour manager, and then we seen a bunch of guys in like football tracksuits. I think it was the Shrewsbury team. So I don't think it was the team, I think it was the staff. They were playing in the football league trophy final or whatever the following day. So I ended up pretty drunk with the Shrewsbury coaching staff, and I was telling them I was going to meet Henrik Larsson on Soccer AM in the morning.
And what, they gave you tips about how to, like, that trap and volley, that top corner stuff? I mean, you nearly found the bucket, man. It was just...
I got them pretty steaming, so I put money on whoever they were playing winning the final, because I got the manager and some Nick. None of the players were boozing, they were in bed, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know if they won, I'm pretty sure they got beat, but can we check that? Give me a fact check.
Oh, we're on it this minute. We're on it right now. Neil's
got the iPad.
He's a Shrewsbury fanatic.
What do you even search for? Did Shrewsbury win the football league, whatever it's
Google
called?
Google says trophy? No answers. But, I mean, so that, like that, whatever it did to Shrewsbury, did it just kind of relax you and you went in there with a groove on a Saturday morning?
It's the first time I've ever been starstruck. Like, I don't really...
Still, again, that time as well.
He's a guy just synonymous with so many happy memories and... Like childhood, just happiest years of your life, sort of. So when to
I
meet
understand
him
and, it.
And I don't think he's changed much. He's very still got that kind of the voice, mm-hmm. that kind of droll sound. He's just, I don't know, he's just a, he's got star quality, hasn't he?
He's doing great, Nick. He's very intense. You know, he looks as if he could still play. But, you know, I watched the whole thing and, you know, I know how, you know, John Fenners was just so excited to get you on, to get the two of you on. And I looked at Henry and I thought he was starstruck too. That's what I thought was going on because...
Well, he wanted to come to one of my shows. He gave me his number and said that he'd seen my stand-up and he was a fan. So I think he was going to come to the Apollo in London, but he never texted me. So I'm a bit sad about that. But
you met him, so that's one chopped off.
I just saved his number as Henrik.
Is it nice to...
So good, even just getting that text message going, nice to meet you, pal, from Henrik. So...
Is it still nice, given what you've achieved and all the people, you know, because you make me feel all the like that all the time, mate. I know you love your music, but, you know, I'm obsessed time with my music too. So when you'll drop in, like, Noel and I, or when Noel and I were out with Roger Daltrey, or
yep.
whatever. Do you have any idea of the effect that's having on me?
Did I go that far? Did I say Noel and I? Surely.
Maybe it was Noel who said Kevin and I.
I still give him his full name. I don't want to enter Noel and I stage. Just still... That's right, I know, Gallagher. He actually sent me one of the greatest text messages I've ever received. I was in Dublin, and Noel was over watching you two. So it turns out we're in the same hotel. And in the reception of the hotel in Dublin, I seen Matt Damon, who was also over to see you two. So I'd been texting Noel, going, I hear you're in Dublin, we're in the same hotel. Celtic were playing Inverness, Cali Thistle. And I was like, to know, I'm going to go and watch it in a bar somewhere. Do you fancy it? And he goes, ah, definitely, mate. So this was, the game was on the Sunday, and on the Saturday, about 2 o'clock in the morning, midnight, 2 in the morning, I get a text from Noel saying, not going to make the Celtic Inverness game in the pub. I'm over at Bono's having tea and toast with Matt Damon. And I was like, mate, that is the greatest excuse for Dingy and Celtic Inverness I've ever read. I was like, you enjoy. I was going to invite me. Is Bono get BT Sport? I'll come over. But that text, I'm what an excuse, man. I'm in Bono.
Please tell me you went back to someone like part-time supporter or.
No, I was just hands up, respect.
It's not bad, is it?
Aye, it's a decent. I just watched it myself, Celtic Inverness. I've just been handed the classified. The results are in. League One playoff final. That's what it's called. Rotherham 2, Shrewsbury 1. They get beat. I take a slight bit of responsibility for Shrewsbury's defeat there.
It was that last creme de menthe that you served them. Now, if this is a tit-for-tat conversation, we've never actually explained in public why there was a traffic breakdown one night after the Spanish Cup final in Madrid.
Oh, that's right, we had the hotel.
The swimming pool up the top.
Me and Big Doc. Mm. We came over to Madrid for... It was Guardiola's last game.
Correct.
Barca against Bilbao in the Calderon.
Correct.
That's absolutely right. And I just wanted to see the end of an era sort of game. And then we came over, that's right, met you. The hotel had a rooftop pool, didn't it? Bar and pool area. I definitely want to get back out this year.
There was a stage where you saw, you know, fabulous football, but just out of your constant curiosity to see what it's like firsthand, to see the people that inspired you. You know, it was like you were on a mission, and just as you went to Argentina, just as, why don't we go to Hertha Berlin as well as Bayern Munich? You've got an insatiable thirst to be at these occasions, eh? It's,
oh, definitely.
It's nothing to do with hospitality or luxury or that. It's an unquenchable thirst to see good football at first hand.
It's stadiums, isn't it? And it's just a different, supporters, different cultures, just watching how different countries, their routines even, just, you know, before the match. Here it's pretty much you go and put a coupon on, you have a couple of pints and then you go to the game. But it's just seeing, different countries' version of, you know, like what you did before it, and I just love all that sort of stuff as well.
That day was Calimocho, and we were singing with the Athletic fans in a restaurant. We'd got our little neckerchiefs on, I don't know if you remember.
The big fans, I've never heard a national anthem as disrespected in my life, and they played the Spanish. I don't know why they never just binned it. It's, you know, Bilbao against Catalans and Basques in Madrid, and they brought, I felt sorry for the singer. I remember they brought her out to sing the anthem, and it was the guy beside us, everybody was booing and whistling, and then the guy beside us, he just went full on, pulled his jeans down, stood up in his seat, like Bart Simpson, just bare ass, just slapping his ass cheeks as the anthem's on. Me and Big Doc are slipping him, going, you've made your point, mate. This guy's not.
You never told me that. That's absolutely brilliant.
Not a fan of the anthem, but I'm just standing watching, I'm going, ah. And you need to sit beside him for the rest of the game after you've seen that side of a guy. Like,
I think I'll ever catch on that mode of expression at football matches.
What, the full?
Just full RCF. Full
up in your seat, RCF.
I think that should be allowed.
A good TIFO, wouldn't it? Good display. Everybody, when the team's
melting back, arms out of the shoulder.
Stand up in your seat, pull your arse out. Be intimidating. Imagine the away team. Welcome to hell.
Your love of La Liga was, you know, we talked before, stemmed predominantly from your dad being a Real Real Madrid fan in those days. Real Ronaldo, as you called him. If I asked you to close your eyes and take a snapshot, from those days that you were watching, you know, in Clyde Bank and you were moved by Redondo, say, or Brazilian Ronaldo, what do you, who do you miss from that? Who do you, because everybody's got, you've got nostalgia maybe for Lubo at Celtic or Henrik at his best. Now, if you could close your eyes and click your fingers and go back to a team, an era, a player, a piece of skill, what do you miss when things have gone from that era that inspired you?
When I first started watching Spanish football?
Yeah,
well, obviously Ronaldo, he was the first guy that I remember just being besotted with, and I wanted these jerseys. I was only like 9 or 10, but you could understand. He was the first guy that you were, you'd never seen stepovers and stuff like that, so that was the first guy I remember. You would put on the game just to see Ronaldo, the way I'm going to say kids, but the way adults put on a game because Messi's playing. Ronaldo was the first guy who had that effect on me. Like, you would watch him, no, rather than the actual match, but he was Luis Enrique, and I used to enjoy watching him. I remember finding it strange that he'd played for Madrid and Barca. Mm.
In that era, that was still quite unusual.
Him, De La Pena,
him and Figo. Oh.
He had the Graham Hunter look going on. he rocked it. I remember having a pendant my mum bought me on holiday years ago, and it had the whole team. Mm-hmm. Like Nadal. Mm-hmm. Remember the defender?
Yeah.
He's related to Rafa
uncle.
Nadal.
His uncle, aye.
Is that his?
Yeah, Tony's his brother, that's Rafa's dad, yeah.
Right.
Milakal Nadal, I mean, a beast and a wonderful footballer from the back.
Albert Ferrer.
Yeah. Chappy Ferrer, I still work with. Chappy, you know, next time you're over, we'll go out and have a couple of drinks. Chappy's a wonderful guy. Wonderful, really nice guy. Right back when the Olympic gold medal.
I love your connections, Graham. I remember the
Champions League final. Matt Damon never played for that team.
In Milan, you said to me, "We're going to go to the fan zone. My mate's DJing." We went down. It was Mendieta. I never knew he was a DJ.
Kevin adores his music, man. He lives for music.
It's good. Yeah. Sometimes you see what ex-footballers, it can be quite a trap. No, if they don't go into something that they're happy with, it can be quite your best years are behind you. But to see Mendieta just up on the decks looking, he was having the time of his life. I was just having a beer. I was going, that's Mendieta.
He played some good music as well, didn't he?
Oh, it was amazing
to see a square full of Real Madrid and Atleti, who do, you know, as fan base, do genuinely dislike each other. It's odd to see them all milling around there.
No, because it's a hard one when Atletico play Real Madrid. It's a hard one to decide. You don't really know who to support. I did come around. I like Simeone. I think he's infectious. I like his passion.
Do you remember we saw him that night in our hotel? He was there with who was he there with?
Was his biggest assistant?
Batista, yeah. Mono Burgos.
Because he played.
He was the keeper in the double
Argentina,
team, and he was a pin thin like that.
Six. He was the backup keeper to that guy that thought the world was going to end, wasn't he?
That wasn't Leo Franco. No,
Carlos Roa
from Mallorca, correct?
He retired from football in 1999 because he thought the world was going to end.
Yeah.
That's an awkward January the 1st, isn't it? Having to phone your boss. Oh, sorry, my mistake. The world didn't end. Can I still get a game?
Chance.
I remember Burgos, he was the backup. He's Simeone's.
As the way those who are close to the club, really close to the club, tell me that Simeone's a brilliant psychologist. He's all the rip-roaring aggression and the waving his arms that you see on the touchline is not what the players get. The players get somebody who's really smart at managing men and getting the best out of them. Whereas Mono, German, Burgos...
They say he's fitness, kind of...
But also, yeah, no, that's Profe Ortega, who's...
That's the guy, they say he's like Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, and the rest.
US military level.
Scares the shit out of Diego Costa, you know. How those two go together, I have no clue whatsoever. And obviously, Profe Ortega doesn't work out too hard with Mono Burgos, who's sizeable. Mono Burgos is a giant now, but as a keeper, he was very, very good. But he's the guy that will work out on the strategy, the tactics, the set plays. It's a really good football brain there. And I sent Barry Robson is working with Aberdeen now, and Barry needed to complete his UEFA badge, whatever it was. And you need practical. So 2-3 weeks ago, they allowed him to get out there and spend 2-3 days, and he came back very impressed indeed. And I know why you would. Jolo's an attractive football character, isn't it? Whether you saw him playing or on the side, the things that he does and how what he looks like while he's doing them, that draws the eye.
Yeah, there's managers that you enjoy watching on the side, like, and he's one of them. Like Jurgen Klopp, he could watch Klopp for 90 minutes, just put a camera on him. Because it means. Did you ever see that one when he was the manager of Dortmund? I think he was playing Napoli. and I've ever seen a guy as angry about a decision. I don't know what the decision, but he was just going, his face, you actually find it, like, I think it's been used as a meme how angry he looked at the decision.
I think he talked about that in our podcast.
He apologised, didn't he, for how angry he got?
He did feel embarrassed, didn't he, my memory is.
But I think he looked that angry that the decision should be overturned. If you can get that worked up, then the ref's got to go, look.
But it's not manufactured, eh?
No, it's
just, you know,
passion.
You see some managers will put that on to impress the fans or to give the player something, and it's raw from him, eh?
And Klopp, Simeone, the guy, Sarri, that was he's a Chelsea man.
He's special, eh?
He looks good as well.
So that final was two Spaniards fighting it off in San Siro, and we did a nice day. And the point I was making was, it was strange to see fans mingling like that. And you started the La Liga memories by talking about Ronaldo, which I guessed you would. Does it raise your eyebrow, Roger Moore style or Carlo Ancelotti style, to find that he's president of Valladolid now?
Ronaldo is?
The guy who, you know...
I never knew that.
Who, you know, has lived more largely since he was a player, and you can see the evidence of it. He's now... So Valladolid came up this season and he's just bought over and he is in charge. And they were struggling and they were playing East Stirlingshire football, until he took over. And since he's taken over, they're playing Champions League football and winning all the time. And it's incredible. So when you're free, we need to go to the Nuevo Zorilla, and go and watch his team and go and meet him.
Definitely.
You up for it?
What, meet the Ronaldo?
It's doable.
Of course I'm up for it.
Right, today.
What is the connection, mate? Why is he at Valladolid?
I don't know. And when he took over originally, it kind of looked like a gimmick. And then when you've watched him and listened to him and seen the effect he's had subsequently, it's patently not. There's patently something about him that, while he knows he's never going to be a coach or a trainer or a manager, and that kind of discipline in life is not... He's a big Baloo the Bear guy. And therefore, being daily... He is. It's a doobity-doo. And therefore, being a leader of a club and having ideas about direction and things like that is patently something that suits him for the moment. Whether he loses interest or not, I can't tell you, because I don't know him that well at all. But he's in it because he wants to make them better, and he's in it because he wants a connection with football, and I love that. I'm glad he's back in. Kind of any way you can get a guy like him back into the game, seems to me it has to be good.
I know, it's just strange that he's at Valladolid. I thought he'd be back into football and...
Correct.
...a role at Madrid, and but...
Correct.
He's had a few controversial moves, hasn't he? Did he not play for AC Milan and Inter Milan? He played for Madrid.
I'd say the answer to that is going to be yes.
How is he viewed in Spain?
He's hated it at
Barca. I take Barca, it, they hate him
because of the way in which he left.
He never went directly, though, did he? Went to
no. He forced himself to go. Forced them to land to go to Inter, and he claims to this day, and I believe him, that he was let down by the board. And that they reneged on a promise, and therefore, although he had an agent I disapprove of, I think it was legitimate enough to go. And his season, that season, if you ever, I did a beautiful, an interview with Chappie Ferrer for one, but also the current Fulham manager, played against him, and I spoke to tons of people who were there with him, and it was like being around him was just magical. Football aside, you know, full of fun, being pranked by other players at Barcelona that year when he scores 38 goals or whatever it is in 40 games, I can't remember the exact figure. Goes to Inter. Plays football, maybe that's the best of his career. Comes up against that Juventus side, and when Paolo Montero fouls him inside the penalty box in a, what is really a playoff for the league between Inter and Juve, even Italy is scandalised by the quality of the refereeing decision and whatever influenced that decision and how Juve won that title in that game. Gets injured, they recuperate him, they work on him constantly for about a season and a half. He plays well in 2002 and he forces his departure to Madrid. So he's kind of hated at Inter, for sure. And at Madrid, people say that they've never seen a better striker. And most people who went to Madrid in those days like laugh at the idea that he's not regarded with Messi, never mind Cristiano, that Ronaldo is maybe... Their argument is maybe he's number one ever, bar nobody.
I watched a game the other night. It was a classical. I never knew Messi had played against Ronaldo's Madrid. You forget how long Messi's kind of been at that level. I just thought... classic Spanish football video or whatever, and it was like Beckham was on, Ronaldo, and
probably Figo.
He was playing as well. Mm-hmm. I think even Roberto Carlos.
I'd imagine Makaleli was playing.
It was just surreal seeing. Mm-hmm. You associate Messi with the modern era, but seeing him with the.
But at that time, when you or I or anybody was watching, Messi looked to us like, oh, that's promising.
Jerry Armstrong was just. I think Messi hit the crossbar. He'd done a wee kind of Maisie run, hit the bar, and then he's just going, "This kid is something special." Mm-hmm. And. It was kind of strange hearing them talk about him in those terms, but I never realised he had crossed over the two sort of generations when you're watching him play against Beckham. And
what's the Messi experience been like for you now?
See, the other night against Spurs, the game
4-2 game, and
that was as good as I've ever seen him. Mm-hmm. And it's quite, I've been really busy obviously with my shows, but I had the night off. I thought I'm going to watch this game, just sit down old school, watched it, and it was as good as I've ever seen him. And I think he seemed that the World Cup almost, it could have derailed him a bit, but I think he seems even hungrier than ever, and it's exciting. I think this year Barca could be.
Well, he's never before scored, what is it, 5 goals in 2 games in the start of a Champions League. Now that he's the captain, he stood up at the Camp Nou in that. I think you've been to the Gamper game where it's an exhibition game, and therefore the players, one or two of the players, certainly the leading player, the captain, the coach, will speak on the pitch briefly. And Messi's like, you know, he's not a great big speaker. He was like, you know, we did well last year. I've inherited this armband from two greats before me, Xavi and Iniesta, and we did well last season. A double is good, but we want that beautiful, that historic cup from the beautiful competition back here. And I think you can see it in how he's playing. Somehow there's another...
Because I've not really been watching as much Spanish football because they don't show it on Sky anymore. You need to download, was it 11, that was called?
Without advertising on their behalf, do it, because there's a new added bonus now with extra bumper Graham on there. So
a dodgy box.
Definitely do it.
So I've not watched, you're just sort of relying on match reports and statistics or whatever to see.
Yeah.
But you forget how deceptive and how it does Messi such a disservice just to rely on the stats when you actually watch the guy. Because even like an assist, I don't really agree with since I've started counting assists. Because you watch passes, right? You watch Messi, he'll play a 30-yard incredible pass to somebody that just needs to tap it across. So for example, Messi will square it away up to Suarez, he'll tap it across, and somebody will have a back post tap in.
So you're saying the pass so Suarez the gets be the assist. Thing.
He on record, he has got the assist, whereas it happened a lot with Iniesta. He'd play the same kind of passes. Somebody would just roll it over to the striker, tap it in. But it goes on record as this guy got the assist. I think it's such an overrated stat. I don't think they should be counted, is what I'm trying to say. But
yeah, but okay, so I'll buy that argument. And therefore, what you're hinting at is the fact that Messi does now so much more than he used to do, and even, you know, what would be considered as the absolute glory days, because he's effectively playing in midfield and still scoring 40, 50 goals a season. You know, if he's the anti-penultimate pass, not the assist, the one before or two before the assist, that tells you positionally where he is in the pitch and his link play with Jordi Alba. When you take Xavi and Iniesta away from Messi as dance partners, and we always knew, and you were there to see that in Alves, he had a guy who completely understood him and loved doing daft, crazy things over the pitch to rip other teams apart. You take all of them away, and him and Alba just reinvent themselves as the perfect, you know, Fred and Ginger of the football pitch.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd watched a Barca game in a while. It was the Spurs game, and it was just like, you could see it coming again, the Guardiola. So, who's the Brazilian, the midfielder? He looks great.
I've always known you know football, man.
What's his name
exactly
again?
Arthur. He looks as if he was born and brought up in La Masia. Made me so happy.
Is he?
No, he's Brazilian and he's only just joined this summer. You're literally in the company of Messi and Xavi. Xavi, I know from speaking to him, thinks Arthur is good enough to be his inheritor.
Yeah.
But won't speak about him publicly anymore because of the pressure that was on Xavi when he was taking over for Pep Guardiola. Xavi, being as smart as he is learned enough not to repeat the pattern. And I've done the same to him as was done to me. So back in Qatar, he's watching all this guy, and he's jumping up and down on his sofa but with excitement. And Messi doesn't talk about
it. It looked great that night.
Well, your eye is good. Messi was asked a few weeks ago, like, you know, of the new signings. And he went, well, you know, they're all very good, but Arthur.
See, I never knew they'd bought him. I thought he'd came out of the academy. Because he's got that mould that he's just ready-made for their sort of
movement,
style.
Thinking, passing, 1-2. I don't care where he's playing. It happens to be that in the club where they used to play that system. Like, watching him is just pure joy.
I'm excited. Yeah, when I watched him, I was like, right, this could be the start of something.
We share a view.
And I'm glad they got rid of Neymar. He just never suited that, did he?
I don't.
Football wise, but his personality and stuff like that.
He's immature. But, like, you know, would you like to see him? Do you think he'll grow up? I'm trying to say a question that I don't believe in myself, so I'm going to abandon it.
Like Ronaldo and the Brazilian, like Ronaldinho, Brazil. You grow up, right, World Cup, that's probably everybody's first football memory as a World Cup. Summer holidays and
definitely
watching the games, right? So you Brazil teams were, no, Romario, USA 94 is the first World Cup I remember, And it was, you know, the yellow jerseys, the blue shorts, the football they played. And I think it's quite sad that that's going to be tarnished through this World Cup this year.
Prince Russia, you're talking about the play acting.
Neymar rolling it. It's just, it's kind of ruining that legacy.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We've got sponsors now who are Bet365, and they want to know your single greatest memory supporting Celtic.
Seville, probably. Even though it ended, I don't even want to say it ended badly, because it was just a great, the experience, the whole journey, but beating Boavista in the semi-final, knowing that you were going abroad to watch Celtic in a neutral venue in a European final, and that team that we had, and going over there actually thinking that we're going to win a European trophy, because you grew up hearing about the Lisbon Lions, and that was the closest I think we'll ever be again.
I didn't go. Did many go?
As a couple years. But that whole journey, just going over there and just seeing so many fans, and the game. If you, I've never quite brought myself to watch it back because I just feel so gutted for Henrik. No, when he scored, he played amazing. The two goals he scored were just unbelievable, and then his face after it when he's holding his silver medal, saying, "What did he say? I never came here for this or whatever." So that was, I don't know if that's the greatest memory though, because how it ended, but I would say Seville, just the whole journey. It was amazing to see us on such a big scale and the quality of the players we had in that team. So I definitely,
perfect,
go for Seville.
It's a good answer.
All the day we stopped to 10 in a row and Rangers had won 9 in a row.
Kevin, you know me well, it's a strict choice situation you're in. You have to pick one.
Probably Seville then. But that day was, cause I grew up thinking Celtic just never ever won the league. We won the Scottish Cup against the Eredivisie, Van Hooijdonk. That was the only time I'd seen us lift a trophy. But that day was May the 9th, 1998. I still remember the date. And then the whole stadium singing Walk On and Perfect Day by Lou Reed came on, I remember. I think that's the first time I cried at a football game. I just get seeing my dad as happy and just watching the whole place when we won the league that day. So in fact, I'm going to go for that then, because it's my earliest, happiest memory.
It's funny you reach for that, because we've had really lovely experiences since we first sat down in the big interview with you. And it's hard to pick through them, but we had one recently where we asked Julian Lescott what it was like on the pitch that day against QPR when they won the title. And we kind of knew the answer. We said to him, what did you do? Instead of celebrating with the goal scorer or running to the fans or a TV camera, he remembered that the kit men and the physios who helped him through injuries were all dyed-in-the-wool Manchester City supporters. So without a thought, he instinctively ran to them to dive in with people. Like, you immediately thought, what will take me away from the Seville choice is my dad's happiness. He was like, what they'll be feeling right now. And to me, that really moved me, that we all know football's beautiful and it does special things to your brain and your heart, and you can ally it to music or drink or defeat or tears or whatever it is, you know, a laugh.
Of too. Course.
But that's
a nice touch, though.
Shared joy.
That's good to hear.
But it's like you, like you're choosing that because of that shared joy.
And it was for my brother as well, because John had grew up right through the 90s, And he's 10 years older than me, so he was getting more of a, he would be like 17, 18, when I'd be 7 or 8. So I never fully grasped how grim a time that was.
The pain.
To be a Celtic fan. Mm. So he had really experienced it. His adolescent years were spent travelling to Brockville, finishing 4th and 5th in the league, and going all over Scotland watching a poor Celtic team. So to finally see the light at the end of the tunnel when Larsson came in and Wim Jansen and
the ninth
Harold Brattback, we need to mention, of course, he scored the...
Harold Brattback pilot.
Is that right? Aye, he is, isn't he? Mm. I don't know how I know that, but...
Some people say you need to be better at finding the runway than...
Henrik spoke very highly off the camera on Soccer M. We were speaking a bit more, like, esoterically about Scottish football and memories that only Celtic fans and him would have, but he was saying Harold, great guy, and he spoke very highly of him on the park as well. Because Jank Larsson, he has played up front alongside Ronaldinho, Messi, Harold Brattback, Darren Jackson. That's quite a Wayne Rooney, and he's played up.
But like when I made that mean-spirited joke that you've just exposed for the mean-spirited joke that it was about Harold, the point is, in my memory, and I'm not a Celtic fan, was that the frustration, and often it's the case of footballers that is, when they're good enough to either play themselves into good positions or to find good space there, and then miss, it's the missing that's frustrating.
I remember his debut, he scored 4 goals and he had a stinker. Like, that is a got to be a football first. It was against Kilmarnock, and I remember Larsson actually stopped the ball on the line. It was almost patronising. It was like, no, bringing a competition winner on. But he still, as you say, you need to be there. And it's only when you lose a striker that you realise, oh, it wasn't that easy. No, where was the guy to tap it in? And then, I don't want to say anything bad about Harold. So.
But Audrey would take him these days. Now, a little birdie, you told me that I started this about an hour ago about being a good communicator. Team talks. I want to talk about team talks. Did you give an inspirational team talk at some stage?
Yes. I was drafted in. It was the day just after Celtic had beat Motherwell for the treble last season, the double treble. I got a phone call for Brendan Rodgers saying it's Scott Brown's testimonial tomorrow. He said, I usually give a team talk, like a tactical talk, and then I usually give a sort of wee minute, get the team in a huddle before we go out, just a wee bit of inspiration. Could you come in and give the inspirational talk before Scott Brown's game against the Republic of Ireland? So I said, of course, but I was like, we need to do it. If we're going to do it, Brendan, we need to do it right. So I said to him, get me a tracksuit, no, with KB on it, get me a clipboard. And so I was going to the game anyway. I was taking my mum and dad up because it was all the money was going to the cancer charities and the Liam Miller fund. So I bought a box for my parents, went up, and my girlfriend, it was great. So about 10 minutes before the game, somebody comes and chaps the door saying, can you come down to the dressing room? So the guy hands me a KB tracksuit, my tactical board, and Roger says, he pulls me aside in the medical room and he said, how do you want me to introduce you? And I was like, you need to say, like we're bringing in this new coach, he's going to be working very closely with the team for the next couple of seasons. He wants to come in and say a few words. So Roger, he's pissing himself laughing and going, right, definitely. So I'm standing outside the dressing room, he's in, saying to the whole team, I'm going to bring this new guy, he's just completed his UEFA pro badges, and So he goes, here he is, right? So I walk in, and obviously, like, Scott Brown, Kieran Tierney, Callum McGregor, all the Scottish and the English ones start laughing when they see it's me. But there's, like, Olivier and Cham and Moussa Dembele, they're thinking, is this the new coach? So I just thought the only way to approach something is just to get into the character, make it look pantomime ridiculous. So they're laughing. I was like, right, boys, silence. So I was like, gather in. So I'm getting right into the gaffer, you're in. The dressing room, Celtic part, looking at them, I was like, gather in. I was like, the gaffer's brought me in because he's worried there's going to be complacency creeping into this dressing room. And I was going for it. I was like, Celtic against Ireland, one of the fiercest rivalries in world football. I left the dressing room just as the Ireland team were in the tunnel, and it was James McLean. He's kind of looking like, Celtic sound up for this? No, it's a testimonial. Then he seen me and we're talking away. I was just in for a laugh, and then that was it. So the team came out buzzing, and then it was a great experience just to go in and rally the troops.
Could you do that again? Is it in the blood?
I think you should get me in for a competitive game. I mean, there's plenty more inspirational talks in there.
We'll have a word with Celtic.
It was a good feeling. I've still got my KB track and my tactical ball too.
I was going to say, like, as much as it was a desperate day for us, it wasn't the Celtic Aberdeen game where you patted me on the head and said, you've done very well getting here, you dirty bastard. But it was
did you know that we met before the Aberdeen Cup final?
The first of the two.
I was just, you should be so proud of your team, Graham, getting this far. and I hope you have a nice day, Graham.
It wasn't even that nice. You literally reached out and patted me on the head, patronisingly.
Was I right? Full time.
So the second time when we had the Scottish Cup cruelly ripped out of our hands,
the
Tierney, you know, attitude. For as much as I hate losing, hate seeing my team like this, really, really gets to me. When he's done and he goes to hospital and they bring him back and nobody will let him in and he's like, I'm getting back into this ground again, you know, boots in hand, and that to me,
his face when he lifted that trophy,
that was fabulous. And he seems to me, I think I've only ever maybe spoken to him once, but also watching him play, I think he's pretty special, eh?
See, I'd never heard of Kieran Tierney, right, until I was doing a show and somebody had messaged me saying this young kid at Celtic is going to be massive. He's looking to change his tickets because he was called into the Scotland under 19 squad or whatever. He had tickets to see me the same night. So I was like, alright, I'll try and sort the guy out. And then I'd say maybe even 3 months after that, he got drafted in to the team. And it was Ronnie Dell, as a lot of Celtic fans will criticise Ronnie Dellia, but he did spot a lot of good players and set up a lot of the spine of the team that done the double treble. But Tierney was playing against, I think it was FK Mulder or whatever they're called. Remember the beaters? They beat Celtic in the first, I think they beat us twice. I'm pretty sure we lost. It was the third and fourth games in the groups are always against in the double header, I think. I'm pretty sure we lost both games. But I remember watching him that night just going, you're the only guy on that park that seems as if he actually cares. And he was great football wise to watch, but it was his passion. And it was quite a low point. Like you thought, right, we're never ever going to see Champions League football again. This is the Europa League. We're getting embarrassed by a team like FK Mulder. But I was like, this kid was the only kind of shining light. And then Rodgers came in, obviously made him a massive part of the team. The rest speaks for itself, you know, what he achieved. But it's like a Paul McStay kind of thing, isn't it? Like, he gets the club
and you're closer to them. You know, either that you can equate to things that they like in their life, or if the club's everything to them. And we're all used to loving players that show their passion and feel like you feel, you would feel if you were on the pitch. But he can also play, in my book. I know that there's a little bit, as we speak, there's some debate about, you know, how he's performed for Scotland or whatever and out of position. That I want to set aside, because that's temporary.
Scotland's locked on it.
It's temporary.
Two of the best players recently are in
Liverpool.
Andrew Robertson.
Liverpool phoned me up when they were weighing up which one to buy and talked to me about, can you watch him when he's at Camp Nou for Celtic and say, you know, what do you see? And, you know, so they were into that same. And I don't think even when they, I think part of what made them do the deal was Celtic were very obstructive about, you know, Tierney and not now and whatever. So how long you've got them for, I'm not, you know.
See, that's the sad thing with being a fan of a team in a smaller league. What the economics of football, you know, there's an expiry date. If you've got a golden generation, you know, it's one, two
quickly,
seasons tops.
Even from Celtic.
I think that's what makes a manager good, though. So you've got to constantly, what do they call it, a cycle, to constantly have to regenerate. And, like, you look at Mourinho and these kind of guys, they can just constantly spend money, just take whoever they want. It's like playing a football, a PlayStation game. You just go, right, pick your dream team, him. I don't really see the skill in that style of managing. Whereas guys at the kind of lower end, I don't mean the lower end, but guys with
less budget, and rely on their wits and their brains,
or academies or whatever, not having to produce young players. Like, we talk about that Barca team 2011. There's something infectious and romantic about a team that have all come through. I remember the Ajax team, like 95-96. I remember, I could not, even though I was only young, I could never get my head around how this is like a school team that went on to win the Champions League. Not like David Seedorf, they all came through at the same time. And then Manchester United with Alex Ferguson. I don't think you're ever going to see that again, because a manager's never going to get as much time in a job to just go, these are the kids. Might take a couple of seasons, but they're going to be special. Because you'd just be sacked, the managers, in the sort of Premiership kind of world. You're never going to have time to...
You're not just saying it's more romantic. You can spot the way in which these players interact with each other on the pitch.
It's special. It's just
because they've grown up together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Even like Madrid, right, they won the last three Champions League. It is incredible. But it was never quite... Oh, like, for what they achieved, they're never going to be spoke about in these terms that Barcelona team, who never ever won three in a row, never even won two in a row Champions Leagues, but it was just a better, I don't know.
It's why you put your finger on why Florentino Perez remains obsessed with, I'm not calling him out here, crushing Barcelona under his heel, because he resents the love that era was given compared to what he thinks his president should be given because of, you know, repeat Champions Leagues.
That's just Real Madrid fear. That's the superficial. Why you can't just create that? You can't manufacture that. The Barcelona team was revered because it redefined football, and it was Madrid. Statistically, they were more successful than that Barca team, but you're not going to tell your grandkids about that team.
Well, it's
sad as it is. But
it's lucky before you finish, but anybody who wants to tell their grandkids about that film will handily have a really well-made film coming out quite soon.
You're not going to sit and tell your grandkids, and then this guy got signed for £125 million, son. And then this other guy...
I remember the day.
He came through, so we bought him as well, son, and then £1 billion we spent, these plucky underdogs, and
like, we showed
they
them.
Won every game they should have won for the money. It's not a good story to tell, is it? Whereas the academy and the managers having the balls to just go like Fergie, Guardiola, who was at Ajax, Van Gaal, was it Louis Van Gaal? I think he was maybe forced just to have to rely on
he was very fortunate players. The guy that's a common theme through a lot of our discussions, in that Johan Cruyff had left, had rebuilt the club and redesigned the academy and left not long before Van Gaal took over, and therefore isn't, I'm not calling it only a Cruyff triumph, but a lot of the players who you'd have seen in that team, Van der Sar and Kluivert, came into or whoever it was, Lippmann, and came into systems that were designed by the Cruyff idea. Some of the kids who came through in that academy, because also some of them were bought with wit from smaller Dutch clubs, they like Barcelona. Can you immediately say it's Cruyff signed Puyol or Valdes? Or no, because they were coming into a system whereby he was, you know, in his last year maybe as his first team coach, so he didn't spot them. But the system all around Ajax, the system all around Bax, was functioning to his template. You know, so he had his KB tracksuit, JC tracksuit, his JC clipboard, and went around saying, "This is how you do it." And that's what we.
Well, that team that owe him. The one, the Ajax team that beat who was it? Was it AC Milan?
They beat Milan with Kluivert's goal later on.
Kluivert, that's who.
And then I think reached the final again the following season and lost on penalties to Juventus.
That's right. Yeah. And then after that, they get absolutely raided, didn't they?
Yeah, the Bosman law. The Bosman law meant that they
dismantled.
Could go. Yeah,
and that was maybe the start of right. You're never going to see a team with what I'm saying about the expiry date and the cycle is. That is obviously going to happen, and it will happen. They were lucky to get two seasons out of that team staying there.
Yeah.
And a lot of them moved on and never.
Van der Sar went to Juventus and was judged a failure. Davidson, Kluivert went across, and it wasn't until Davids reached a different era.
Went to Barca and never really.
The De Boers aren't regarded as great successes in Barcelona. Bogart was a strange case in that he gave up. He was like, "I'll go to Chelsea, so I'd sign for a team that isn't and won't be in the Champions League because I hate this travelling. I hate being away from my family, so I'll pick a club who won't be any good." And of course, they qualified for the first ever season in the Champions League. But yeah, they went for different reasons, but they went easily, and it was easy to cherry pick and break aside, you know, this product that had been farmed and thought about for years. And right, we'll have you. So we need to close because of your time, and I need to give you a difficult one sent from Bet365. The best footballer that you've seen live. And I think by the best footballer, it might open up the concept that not the one that you're most, you know, indebted to in your life. So you can say Henrik, but they are asking a difficult question because you've seen one hell of a lot of moments live with great, great footballers.
Like performance-wise,
you can choose.
Messi live, Ronaldo live. You need to go somewhere a bit more niche. I remember the first time I ever really acknowledged a performance was, I remember Celtic played Dynamo Zagreb, or Croatia Zagreb they were called at the time, and Robert Prozinecki played, and that night at Celtic Park, I mean, it was when I was first kind of maturing into like, acknowledging the game, mm-hmm. and not just the strikers, like, actual the guy that could dictate. And I remember the way he played that night, I remember saying to my dad, like, because we'd seen him in Euro 96, remember Croatia had that great team with Bilic, Prozinecki and mm-hmm. Davor Suker, and that night I remember watching him just going, wow, that was amazing to watch. And then I heard that he smokes like 20 fags a day, but he played the way he could have played that game with a fag in his mouth. It was the first time I'd seen a guy just dictate the flow, and or the first time I'd acknowledged that this is another way of appreciating a football. So,
on which note, Kevin Bridges, thank you for joining us again. Thank you for being so generous with
pleasure.
Your time. It's friendship aside, it's really, really good to share this and enjoy it, and I'll see you in Valladolid this season. Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast,
and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.